everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where one writer talks to another writer about the books we write and the lives we lead and how these two are one in the same. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And we are funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA, please go to pnwa.org. You know, I usually interview authors on Author to Author that I've already had a chance to interview for the magazine, but for the second time now, I'm going to interview someone I haven't met yet, technically. Her name is Lori Frankel. She's a novelist from Seattle, Washington. She's a part of the excellent writing organization, the Seattle Seven, with members like Garth Stein and Jenny Shortridge and Erica Bauermeister and Kevin O'Brien, names I'm sure are familiar to you because I have interviewed them all on Author Magazine. But I get a chance finally to interview Lori today, and as I said, I haven't met her, although I did just speak to her for a couple minutes before the show began. I have to say, it's so odd the way this is and how people work, but I felt as soon as I talked to her as if I had known her for many years. It's true, which is why I am so glad to have her on the show, and I hope you feel the same way. So let's just get her on and have a chat. Lori, you are on Author to Author. Welcome to Author to Author.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here.
Well, it's good to have you on. Let's introduce you to our listeners if they haven't read your work already. Your debut novel was called Atlas of Love, but today...
Yes.
This very day, August 7th, is the release day for your second novel, Goodbye for Now. Is that right?
Yep, that's exactly right.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's very exciting.
And I should say, for our listeners in Seattle, if you're listening, I know a lot of you will listen to this probably in archives, but if you have the chance, this Friday at Elliott Bay Books, downtown or in Capitol Hill now, Seattle, Washington.
Yeah.
Lori will be reading from her novel, Goodbye for Now, and also will be having a release party down there with live music. Is this right? Am I getting all this correct?
Yep, absolutely.
So there's going to be live music, there's going to be food, and all are welcome.
Yes, and all are welcome, yes. Party favors, alcohol, going to be great.
Oh, that's just awesome. Well,
yes.
Lori, let's tell you what. Let us begin. I want to get to Goodbye for Now in a moment, but I first want to ask you to think back into your past, and remember, if you can, the time when you first understood that story mattered to you, just the concept of story. Maybe you told someone a story. Maybe someone told you a story. Maybe you read a story. Can you remember when that idea first lit up in your head?
I don't think I can, because, in fact, I think it happened before I had memory of things. You know, my parents read to me every night before bed. I have some of my earliest memories are of being at the library, you know, because my parents took me to the library for fun and probably to get me out of the house when I was
right.
a small child. And I think I just grew up with it. So it's one of those things that is completely – it's almost like it's inborn. It's almost like – you know, like I've had it all along. It feels like that. It certainly
yeah.
feels like that.
Right. You have no memory of it at all. That's so interesting. And so obviously you were a reader yourself, I assume.
Oh, yes, hugely, yeah. And in fact, my background is in reading literature instead of writing literature. I came to the writing pretty lately. My graduate work is in Shakespeare, reading Shakespeare, obviously not writing Shakespeare.
Well, maybe you could try to add to the... Oh, no.
Right.
All right, so you studied literature. Did you take an advanced degree? Did you go to get a master's or a PhD in it?
I did, yes. I had
all the way to the PhD?
I did the coursework, and then I did not write the dissertation. Instead, I wrote a novel. You'd think that would be a good substitute, but it doesn't work that way.
So take me to that moment. You've done all this work. Your parents are so proud, and you sit down. Talk about that moment when you said, I'm not going to write this dissertation. I'm going to write it. I mean, that's one of those life decisions. Well, I don't know. Tell us about it. What was that like?
Yeah, it's quite a thing, right?
Yeah.
Wow. It's a really good and hard question. Graduate school is a very special thing, and gradually more and more it was just kind of not what I wanted to be doing. I left to teach at a community college in Baltimore, You know, the short answer is I left because I got a full-time job that didn't care whether I had the PhD, because instead they wanted me to teach, and that's what I was really committed to doing and interested in doing.
Did you teach Shakespeare?
I did, but I also taught comp, and I've taught creative writing, I taught playwriting, I teach gender studies sometimes, I teach lots of different kinds of writing and reading.
And you're still teaching now?
No, I was teaching at the University of Puget Sound until last June, and then I have been writing full-time for a year and a couple of months now.
Well, that's great. Congratulations.
It is.
And I'm assuming, although I don't want to presume, but I know how this goes, that the novel that you wrote instead of your dissertation, was that The Atlas of Love, or was that simply your first attempt?
Nope, that was The Atlas of Love, in fact.
Wow.
Yeah, that was fun. Yeah, thank you.
Holy smokes. Okay, so you sat down and did that. I assume, though, so you're reading, and people don't always believe this, but some of the best preparation for writing is voracious reading. If you're
reading with attention. It's really funny to me how many people don't believe that, when it seems to me to be just obviously true, that the best preparation for writing is reading.
Well, so for someone who doesn't understand that, explain how that worked for you, because clearly when you sat down to write, you weren't starting from scratch. And I know what it feels like, but you were starting, there was inside of you a knowledge of what story felt like, of what a sentence felt like, of what. So talk about that if you can.
You know, certainly in graduate school I did my fair share of narrative theory, where you think about why stories are told the way they are. And having thought about it from that perspective, I think makes it easier to sit down and do something as daunting as write a novel.
Yeah.
Which just seems like such a big thing if you haven't broken it apart and studied that. But mostly I just think the more you read and the more options you see on the page, the more you think that the one that's in you is a possibility.
Yes, I agree. Although, you know, there's an interesting thing, which is that studying literature and creating it are still very different animals. The one can give you a foundation for sure, but you never really know. It was Flannery O'Connor who said, it's just great, she said, everyone knows what a story is until they write one.
Yeah.
And I really think that's true, that you know, reading voraciously gives you a fantastic foundation, especially if you really take it into you and really take in the emotional journey that you go on. And so that you're trying to replicate that in your own work, and knowing what it is, what it feels like, what you're shooting for emotionally, what you want your book to feel like because of what you've gone through. But until you have to make all those choices that a writer has to make, and you see suddenly when the blank page is presented to you that you can do anything, right? There is no right answer. That's when you really learn what a story is from the inside out.
And I think you can't know whether or not you can write a novel until you sit down and write a novel. I think it's something you figure out after it's there on the page. You think, oh, well, I must have written that, so I guess I can write a novel. It's too big of a thing to figure out any other way but doing it, I think.
I agree completely. You can't. It's one of those things, and really in a way like most sort of life journeys, I remember when I did my own, I started a theater troupe sort of, a show I did, I performed around when I was a much younger man, and I remember thinking once I was a couple years into it, thinking if I had known all I didn't know when I started the journey, I wouldn't have done it. You know, I just sort of, there was so much I just figured out on the fly, and it was amazing to me how just throwing myself in, I was able to pick it all up, but there's no way to know until you, because especially for novels, there is just the endurance element of it. The going to the desk every day. I assume you had a regimen you set up for yourself.
Yes. When I'm writing, I'm writing, and I don't have to do it in a particular place or at a particular time, because there's just nothing I'd rather be doing. And so, a lot of it I wrote sitting on the floor in my living room with a laptop, and that's great. So it's a regimen, but it's a less regimented regimen. It's less organized than all that.
Is that how you live your life? Do you sort of?
Yes.
Wait, nah, so that means you're not an outliner, right?
That's right. No, definitely not.
You know, I know if writers or outliners are not within about 30 seconds of meeting them.
Yeah.
It's true. Right. I can nail it almost every time. And I knew as soon as you said hello, you were an outliner. I don't know what it is, but it's so weird the way that works. But you're not.
Yeah.
All right. So Lori, goodbye for now. I want to talk about this because it has a very interesting concept in it, which I think is applicable in an odd way to writers, and maybe I'll get into that enough. But very briefly, there's a sort of a high concept behind this story. Maybe you can. It has to do with the mixture of it's a love story of a kind, but a very sort of contemporary one.
Yes. It's a love story about a software engineer who invents a way for people to email and later video chat and otherwise electronically correspond with their dead loved ones.
Yes.
So, and the idea is that all of us these days live so, or most of us these days live so much of our lives online and have such an identity, an online presence, that we don't really need to be there for it. That a clever programmer could write an algorithm that could recreate that online identity after we were gone.
Do you believe that? Now, I don't want to ruin the story. What do you think?
Well, I mean, that is the topic of the book, I suppose, is the gap between who we really are and the self that we manage to present and recreate online. I think it's less about whether I really believe it and more about which self we put most of our time into.
Yeah.
I think there's a huge difference between our online selves and our live selves, but
I think
a lot of us spend most of our time being our online selves these days.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, your Facebook self is not your, is not your. I mean, well, nothing online can simulate the fullness of you. It's just impossible. I don't care how many videos. There's videos of me all over the internet now because of this magic, and it's not me. You know, it's just a fraction of who I am. But it's a fascinating concept, and in fact, it begins with the programmer coming up with a sort of algorithm, this sort of bulletproof algorithm for matchmaking, based upon a different set of data. Isn't that right?
Yes, right.
Not quite bulletproof, but it's a genius, this new algorithm kind of.
Yes. Its premise is that who we say we are is not who we really are, and who we say we want is not necessarily who we really want, and that he can look at the self that you present online by looking at clues and find out who you really are and who you really want based on that.
That actually
strikes me as much more fictional than the recreating dead people.
Well, you know, I'll tell you though, there is a strain within humanity that wants to quantify love, that wants to make it.
Yeah.
In fact, there's a woman named Ali Condie. She's a YA author who's got a very popular series. I think it's called The Crossed, where she deals with that. Which is there's this algorithm that this is kind of a futuristic dystopian thing where they match people up according to these, you know, this algorithm again to make it work out. And this question is, you know, and I have a couple, and they're always guys. God help me, you know, who want there to be this formula to figure it out, that it's just plug in the numbers and it'll all work out. And
that's what you want. It's so hard to find it the only way that there is to find it, and so we want there to be some magical way to cut through that.
Yeah, but we don't, you know, because, I mean, think about writing a book, right? When you sit down to write, you're doing it because you want to change. You want to choose every one of those words, right?
Yeah.
You want to make the choice. If people go, you know, have you been to writers' conferences at all?
Sure.
Okay. And invariably, somebody stands up and says, "Should I outline or shouldn't I? How many words should I write a day? How do I?" They want the pace by numbers for how to write the book.
Yeah.
And it's like, why would you want that?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, yes. And again, I think it's because the work of figuring out what works for you, whether you're a person who should outline or you're a person who should write a certain number of words a day, that takes a lot of trial and error. And so then 2 years have passed and you haven't really started your book yet. That's very frustrating for people. They want to just cut to the chase, like skip the dating and skip the outlining and just get to the novel writing and the happily ever after part.
You know, it's a funny thing about love, because I'm writing a memoir now about meeting my wife and the sort of unusual way we met, and eventually I married her, obviously. And my feeling about love has always been that, at least that's something I discovered in my relationship to her, was that she was one of the most, the decision to be with her was the decision against which I based all my other decisions, because it felt most authentic to me. Not that she completed me, but it felt like the most authentic expression of what I wanted from life, what I wanted life to feel like.
Right.
You know?
And that's how it should be. I mean, that's the, boy, is that a good decision to base the rest of your life
on.
Isn't
it?
Yeah.
But writing should feel the same way. It's like, don't you want your books to feel like something almost brought to you that you're obeying the translation of it?
Yes. And this particular one did come to me whole, although then it changed a lot in its execution. But it, the first one I kind of, you know, the first one was a struggle to think of. This whole thing just came to me, and that's a really great feeling.
Isn't it good?
Yes.
It can be
really,
easier sometimes.
Really
it doesn't have to be hard.
It doesn't have to be hard. And that's of course, what is true about love, too, is relationships can be hard, but I feel like when they're right, they shouldn't be. They should just be easy.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, the way I always looked at it with my wife is that, you know, we both want to grow as human beings. We both want to expand. We both want to, you know, we come with our stuff and our stories that we're trying to rid ourselves of. And the relationship, for me at least, and I know for Jen, my wife, it's true also, that becomes the place where we can do it. That the other person encourages us for that growth. I mean, there's plenty of conflict and so on. That's going to happen. But ultimately, we sort of believe in the other person. We believe in their potential to grow and where they're headed.
Yeah. And isn't that lucky?
Oh, it's great.
Yeah,
it's
great.
Way. You know what we have? We have on the board a caller who I think wants to ask us a question. So I'm going to invite, and I think I know who it is, but we're going to invite them on and see what they have to say. You ready?
Okay. Yeah.
This will be fun. All right, caller.
Hi, Bill. How are you?
It's Jeffrey. Jeffrey, how are you doing?
I'm doing wonderfully. Yourself?
Well, I'm spectacular. I'm here talking to my new friend, Lori Frankel, and I'm hoping you have some awesome question for us.
Well, boy, no pressure or anything. Lori, I've already become a really huge fan. Your ideas are amazing. Your goodbye for now. What a great concept.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
And also, wonderful job on designing your website. I just got through doing my own and should have just farmed it out, but figured I'd give it a shot. That old JavaScript, nice job. I'd like to ask this of all Bill's guests when he honors me by letting me come on here with him. What is your process? I heard you speak a little bit about that earlier, about the writing process. Some do outlines, some do drafts. What's your process? And as far as relationships go, you have such great ideas. Are you single?
No.
I am very, very not single at all, no.
Oh, these are good questions. All right, Jeffrey, we're going to put you on hold, and we're going to take a crack at these. All right, yes, I know you are married, in fact.
I am, yes. In fact, my husband designed the website and executes it. So,
since
Jeffrey
that.
Likes the website, he should know that too.
All right. So your process. You're not an outliner. So describe how now in Goodbye for Now, the story came to you pretty much complete-ish anyway. Yeah.
Complete. It turned out I was wrong about some things.
Without giving it away, were you wrong about the ending?
Yes, what I thought of as being the first, third of the book turned out to be the first two-thirds of the book. And so then I was just wrong about the ending. And I love it when that happens, when you're drafting and the characters say, Laurie, no, you idiot, that's not what's about to happen. This is what's about to happen. And you think, oh, my gosh, you're so right, and I'm so wrong. And so that was great. As I say, this is true, I don't outline. In middle school when they tried to make you outline, it eludes me. So
doesn't it drive you mad that they're trying to teach every child to outline?
Yeah, I know. And I used to tell I used to teach a first year composition, and one of the first things I would tell those students is, if outline isn't your thing, then don't do it. And it was, for so many of them, it was this revelation. It was this freeing thing that I was their first teacher in years to say to them, maybe outline isn't your thing. You don't need to do it.
Good for you. You know, they would, of course, I was inclined. I wanted to be a writer. That was all I ever wanted to do. So I was writing and writing. I never outlined anything. And so I'd take the classes, and they'd tell me to outline, and I wouldn't even know what to do. I didn't understand because
right.
I suspect I'm like you in this way, which is I'll be out for a jog or whatever, and I'll get an idea, you know. But to me, and it can seem really like a great idea, but I have learned, although it's been slow, but I have learned this, that no matter how sparkling that idea appears away from the desk, I must test it on the page to know if it's the real thing or not, because it might not be. I can't know until I'm writing it. I don't know that the character really is going to do what they're going to do until I try to make them do that.
Right, of course, because it's good in theory, but it's not good in fact. It's true of so many things. Process-wise, one of the things that I do is I write with three documents open at a time. One is the document that I'm writing. One is a document that's full of cuts from the thing that I'm writing so that I can throw things away without feeling like they're really gone. If I change my mind later, they are still there. I have never put anything back in even once, but I know that it's there in case I want it later. And I have a document open for ideas that come into my brain that I think, that might be where I'm going with this. And then I write it down and see whether the writing goes there or not. And sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. But again, that way I know that I haven't lost it. I'm not going to forget it. I can have it there in case I want it later.
Right.
And that's almost like outlining, sort of organized.
Well, in my head, and I'm sure it's true of you, you have sort of bullet points probably that you're aiming for. I mean, I don't know, I shouldn't say, but I know that this book really came to you fast, and any story I've ever written, I've had a basic idea of what I've wanted. You know, I don't start from zero. I mean, it's not just, what's the first word?
No.
I have no idea kind of thing. There's always something, but you've got to be, the thing is also, I think whether you're an outliner or not an outliner, you need discipline. The outliner needs a certain kind of discipline to construct the outline so they can work with it. And the non-outliners, like myself, we like you, we also need discipline to trust that the story will be found and to keep the story within the story that it's supposed to be instead of letting it wander all over the place.
Yeah, and so I think it's trust, and I think it's faith that it sucks right now, but it's going to get better later. It's this like faith in the power of revision that allows it to be not working right now, but not panicking because it's going to get better.
The sucks right now is rough.
Yes, it is.
As a novelist, you absolutely, or just anybody writing any book length thing. I finished one memoir, I'm writing another one now, and same basic process, oddly, but
it's amazing to finish a memoir and still have more memoir in you.
Well, and there's a newer trend in memoir, which I think is in the one certainly I followed, having come from a novelist background, which is that you don't do the whole thing, you do a portion of you're really doing like a novel based on your life, like Cheryl Strayed's was that way, mine covers 7 years, this one's going to cover seven, so you take a chunk of your life and tell that like a story. But you.
Yeah, my students always used to ask what the difference is between memoir and autobiography, and that's what it is, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think also memoir is really artistic in its ambition.
Yes.
There's nothing wrong with the celebrity saying, "I know you're all interested in me, so now I'm going to tell you."
Sure.
You know, or climbed a mountain or something. But really, it's my life is actually not that interesting, but it's interesting to me, and I've found that with an artist's eye, I think make it interesting further. For other people. And so, but you're not an outliner, so you feel your way through. And so for you, and I think this is true for all writers, but it happens at different times, there must be the pleasure of discovery. Yes?
Yes, for sure. Yeah. And that's truly the best part of it.
When it comes together
and you figure it out, even though sometimes that's very painful, and I feel like I often have these revelations that I realize are going to involve a great deal of rewriting. In order to make this thing happen in this late chapter, I need to go back and change all of these other things in the beginning. And it feels daunting, but in fact, I find that it goes much more quickly than I imagined that it will.
Isn't that odd?
It's
don't you hate it when you have one of those discoveries and you go, no, God, don't do that?
Yes.
Oh, Jesus,
yes.
That screws everything else up that came on, like the dominoes all falling. But strangely, and isn't it sometimes, don't you find sometimes, it's almost like the stuff that came before it that was almost preparing you for it and you didn't see it at the time.
Right, yes,
you
exactly.
Go back and rewrite it.
Exactly, and I just think, how could I not have seen this before?
Yes.
It's like the same experience as when you're watching TV or a movie, and there's this revelation, and you think, oh, well, duh. Of course that's what happened. I should have seen it earlier. It is astonishing, though, when that happens in something that you are writing yourself. It's like my brain is keeping it from me.
Yeah. Well, sometimes, you know, one of the hardest things is allowing yourself to kind of giving up control in a weird way. I mean, I know we write them, but I really feel like my job is just, I mean, this is what Andre Dubuque said when I interviewed him, and he said it really great. He said, you know, writing has taught me just get the hell out of the way. Get out of the way and let the thing through. But, I want to have control over my life. I never do. It's a myth, but I still think I'd like to.
Yeah.
And you have to release that and let the thing do what it's supposed to do. Even though it's coming through you.
Yeah, yeah. And for me, I let that happen by promising myself that if I don't like it, I can change it later. And I never do. But I tell myself that I can. And that's I also save in drafts. So I can always go back and open up the last document. I don't have to commit to anything necessarily.
Right.
And sometimes the hardest part is, you know, like first pass pages where you are committing. This is it. You cannot change your mind anymore. It is going to be this way forever and ever. And after years and years of allowing yourself to put it down and change it later and fix it later, that's a scary moment.
It is, but boy, you've got to learn to do it. I had one of those with the memoir I wrote, and sometimes artists are the worst judge of their own work. I just watched this great documentary on Woody Allen, who I don't love everything he's done, but after watching this documentary on him, I so admired the way his relationship to his work, which was so clean. He just so didn't care what other people thought of it. But to give you an idea, there's a great part where after he writes Manhattan, for which he, you know, was lauded up one side, down the other. I think they won the Oscar for best screenplay. He was so disappointed in that movie that he was going to offer Paramount or whoever his production company was to do the next movie for free because he felt he had so bombed and so missed the boat with that.
Wow. Yeah. The more writers I meet, the more I realize that no one is happy with anything, which is kind of unfortunate. Nope.
Yeah, and so, all right, so now goodbye for now is done. Okay. You're going to go out, and you're going to hit the road a little bit, I'm sure.
Yes.
Talking to people about it. Now, are you someone who gets, but obviously, for anyone who doesn't know the process, this book was finished by Lori a little while ago, and so how long do you wait to start the next one?
So last time I did this, I was teaching full time, and so in fact, the whole time I was writing Atlas, and before I started the new one, I would take 9 months off to teach, and I wouldn't even look at it at all because I couldn't. Grading papers takes a lot of time, so.
Right.
It couldn't be done. And that's another one of those examples of there are lots of people who swear you have to write every single day.
For that one, you did not. I did not.
I took off so much time because I had to. And this one, and so I was really worried this time about how, if I weren't teaching, I would start a new book, but then it turns out that you have to take 9 months off to promote it. So it's going to work out. My hope is to do this one through the fall and start writing again in the winter.
Well, I can't wait to read it, Lori. Thank you so much. It was great to talk to you, great to meet you, and best of luck with the novel.
Thank you so much. This was really fun, and I appreciate it tons.
Oh, no problem at all. Well, thank you for listening, everybody. Next week will be Kirby Larson. Until then, thanks for listening, and as always, do what you love. You can't go wrong.